You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Exodus Trail Cameras. Now, it's summertime, and that means it's time to start getting our trail cameras ready and our trail cameras out to start capturing pictures of velvet bucks. And our friends at Exodus are kicking things off with Velvet Fest. Now, what is Velvet Fest? Long story short, Velvet Fest is the opportunity for you to win a variety of different prizes just by purchasing Exodus trail cameras, one of the best trail cameras on the market. Now, until July 12th, when you purchase any trail camera, you will be automatically entered into a drawing to win a variety of prizes from companies like Wicked Tree Gear, Maven Rifle Scopes, Tethered Tree Saddles, and of course, Exodus Trail Cameras. Be sure to follow Exodus on Facebook and Instagram, and be sure to visit ExodusOutdoorGear.com for more information on Velvet Fest.
Welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. I'm Chad Riker. I'm your host for the show. And today I've got Rustin Fu coming on. And the reason I brought Rustin on here today is because Rustin has been killing it in the elk calling world. He taught himself how to call elk from nothing, literally from picking up a bugle tube and not really even knowing what it was, all the way to doing competitions and calling elk into him when he's out in the woods. So I thought it would be really cool to hear the journey that Rustin took on how to teach himself, because he put the time, he put in the effort, and he taught himself how to call elk. So I got him on here today to talk about all that stuff. Another thing I did want to mention was this recording was done, I believe Rustin was on a speakerphone on his cell phone, so the audio sounds a little bit echoey, or a little bit like he's in a tunnel. You can still hear it perfectly. There's nothing wrong with it. It just sounds a little bit echoey. Listen to the whole thing. He's got a ton of great information that he talks about, and I'm looking forward to hearing the outcome of some of these competitions that he talks about on the podcast here. So with that, let's jump into the sponsor stuff. If you guys are tracking, Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting is the title sponsor for the podcast. We're to that time in the season where I think it's important that everybody needs to start really mentally and physically preparing for that elk hunt. And the University of Elk Hunting can walk you all the way down that road, all the way from the point where we talk about today with Rustin, not even knowing what an elk call looks like, all the way to point of calling elk. So use the code ROOKIES and you can save 20%, which is $20, on that University of Elk Hunting. Second sponsor is Go Hunt. With Go Hunt, you get $50 worth of in-store credit when you use the code ROOKIES and you sign up for the Insider Program. Take a look at Go Hunt. You can't really see their Insider Program until you join it, but I can tell you right now that it's totally worth it. I just got done putting in for Arizona mule deer, and I don't know the results for that yet, but I was able to pick all those units that I wanted to choose by using Go Hunt, and it told me the percentage of chance that I would have in each one of the units, and then it kind of breaks down the unit by the different seasons, whether it be over-the-counter archery or early season, early archery, late rifle. Tells you all about the climate and the temperatures and where the mule deer are going to be hanging out. And that's for any species that you want to hunt. They have different articles for any species. So check that out. Use the code ROOKIES. Get $50 in in-store credit when you sign up for the Insider Program. And then the third sponsor I want to talk about is Onyx Hunt. And Onyx Hunt has absolutely, it's changed the way, I mean, I started using it when I started backcountry hunting, so I can't really say it changed the way I hunt, but I can tell you that it changed the way I hike. I've been hiking for many, many years, and I've used everything from old Garmin Rhinos all the way to paper maps. I grew up in the military using paper maps and doing land navigation and terrain association off of paper. So using Onyx Hunt has absolutely changed the way I do anything. I download those maps to my phone, and then I have them with me all the time, in my cell phone, in my pocket, ready to go. Really awesome tool, absolutely worth every single penny. So use the code ROOKIES on the Onyx Hunt memberships and you can save 20%, whether it be an elite membership, which is the entire United States, or the premium membership, which is a single state. You get one state with a premium. Anyway, use the code ROOKIES on any of those platforms, University of Elk Hunting, Go Hunt or Onyx, and we'll save you a little bit of money. That way you can put that towards some tags or towards gasoline or whatever it is to get you out in that hunting woods. And with that, I appreciate everybody listening. And here we go with Rustin Fu, the Hawaiian hunter. Rustin, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate having this opportunity, man.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you taking the opportunity and coming on. Give us a quick background on who you are and kind of where you came from and where you're at now.
Yeah, no problem. So I was born in Hawaii. We left in the year of 97. We reside here in Washington now. I kind of went back and forth. Just now I'm a construction worker, you know, and I have a passion for elk hauling. It's obviously, it's something that grew on me and it's stuck since, and it's something that I will do for a very long time.
Where did that passion come from as far as calling elk? Was there something, like, how'd you get into it? How did you get into hunting and calling elk?
Yeah, so funny story about that, how I got into it. I've never hunted elk before, never seen an elk in the wild. I had nothing to do with elk. And so in my high school, there's an FFA class, and I was really close with my teacher. And she was like, hey, you should hang out with my husband. He's always by himself, but he loves to hunt. I'm like, yeah, cool. You know, so we went on a trek over to Eastern Washington, and we went driving around the mountains, and we come across this big herd of elk. And he's like, hey, I got a bugle tube in my back seat. Why don't you give it a shot? I'm like, I don't know how this thing works. And so first, to be specific, it was the Primos, I believe the Terminator with the blue reed on the end.
Yep.
And so I get out. I'm like, all right. So I start blowing on this thing, and I'm reefing on it, and there's just no noise coming out. And it was so frustrating. I was like, man, there's got to be a trick to this thing. So I sat there for probably 10, 15 minutes trying to make a noise. Finally, I get this little squeal, and it was super high pitch. And next thing you know, this bull way out there just pipes off. And that moment on, I was in love. I was like, okay, I need to learn how to do this, because that was amazing. Like, just hearing that bull was all it took.
That Primos call, is that one of those, like, open reed calls where you kind of, you know, it's not a diaphragm call, right?
Yeah, it was not a diaphragm. I believe they call it an external reed.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. The first time I picked up a call, and I actually had a, dang, man, I can't remember who made it, but it was an external reed call. It sounded more like I was calling donkeys than I was calling elk, for sure. I don't know what sound I was making, man, but it wasn't an elk sound. So I know the feeling.
Oh, yeah. I know too, man. I did a lot of those in my day.
Yeah. So before we jump into elk and we really dig into that, I'd like to – so did you get to hunt anything in Hawaii, or were you too young for that when you moved?
So I started originally when I moved back, when we moved here to Washington, I flew back to Hawaii every once in a while, to see family and stuff. And while one of the trips I was back, my dad guys were archery hunting. And so I was like, man, I want to do that. So I bought a bow and practiced, and I did some hunting in Hawaii, and then I left my bow there. So every time I go back, I have something to use. And then by the time I hit high school, I was here in Washington. I was like, you know, man, I got some friends that go hunt. Like, you know, I want to go hunt these animals up here. So I brought my bow back, and I looked up the seasons, you know, and all that stuff. And I got ready, and I went out and fell in love. My first year ever elk hunting, I had no idea what I was doing, but I missed a cow. It was any elk unit here in Washington, and I missed this cow at like 35 yards. I have no idea how that happened, but I did. And so that kind of whole coming from Hawaii and wanting to figure it out and hunt on my own here is what got me into it. And from that moment on, it just branched into me wanting to hunt everything as much as I can, and it just grew on to me. So that's where it all started, and that's where I'm now.
All right, so calling elk, let's get into it. That's what I really brought you on the show for, was to talk about calling elk. And I'm very curious. So you talked about where it all began, and I'm kind of curious about that journey of learning. So how long ago was it when you picked up that old Primos
Terminator.
All right. So that Primo Terminator, I picked that up. I believe I was a junior in high school, so that was 2008.
Okay, so 10-ish years ago, 10 or 11 years ago.
About 11 years ago. And right, I mean, the next day after I did that Primo scenario with that bull, the very next day I went to Sportsman's Warehouse at the local store, Sportsman's store. And so I went to the elk calling section and I just looked at everything. I had no idea what I was looking at. Nothing, but I was like, well, that one looks cool. That one looks cool.
Yeah.
So I grab them, you know, and I get in my car. I don't even leave. I just sit in my car and I open them and I start doing it. I'm like, okay, this is going to be a lot harder than I thought it was. And I just, honestly, I just put it in my mouth and I just made noises. I didn't even care what I sounded like. I was more focused on knowing how to make a noise. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, so I didn't want to sound like an elk. I just wanted to, okay, how do I get the notes? How do I make any sort of sound with control, you know, and from there.
So are you still using the external or did you get a diaphragm at that point?
Okay, yeah. So sorry. Yeah, it was, I went with diaphragms for that part just because they look different. They look more user-friendly.
Uh-huh.
At least that's what I thought. And so I went, I bought the car. They were Carlton's. Now they're known as Native by Carlton's, but when back when I bought them, they were the Hunter Specialties Wayne Carlton diagram.
Yeah.
Calls.
Were those like?
And it was. I got. What the?
Were the are those like green and orange or something like that back then? Were there? Doesn't matter.
Yeah. So there was. It was green and orange, but before that, even before that, they were just brown tapes. So it was. They didn't have the plastic dome pieces. It was just straight the frame and the latex. There was no dome, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
There was no dome over it. Okay. So, and it was, I got a 2.5 because they make all these different styles. You can get a 2.5, a double reed, a triple reed, a single. I got a 2.5 and a single. And with those two calls, I just made all the noises I could possibly make. And man, it took me a while before I was even close to sounding like an elk. And after that, it just kind of, after that whole process of finding noises, making noises, from then it just got more critical. I mean, I drove my mom nuts, that's for sure. You know, I'd be sitting in the room bugling all day, all night, getting home from school and bugling, middle of the night bugling, trying to sound really good, you know. It's just, I think it was more of a personal preference to where, okay, if I sound real, they should want to come to me, you know.
Yeah.
And it, taking in mind, this is all before I've ever really got into elk hunting.
I wanted to ask that. Is that so? This is all before you ever even have been out elk hunting or anything, right? You're just trying to sound like an elk.
Exactly. This is all just me wanting to sound, not knowing how they would react in the woods or anything. This is just, man, I want to sound like that. You know, I want to talk to these things. And it's just crazy because then when, at least when I started hunting elk, I had an idea of where to start, you know. And so once I figured out how to make all the noises and all this stuff, and that's when it really got, like I was saying earlier, it got real critical for me. That point on, it was more technique. It was more of making the specific sounds. So I went in the same diaphragms that I called or bought Wayne Carlton. He has an instructional DVD. And I bought it and I watched it 100 times. And I would just keep replaying it, you know, because when he would use the diaphragm reed to make those sounds, the way his mouth would move, his jawline, and even the throat under where your tongue is connected. Like, that's how I take everything too critical. So I would replay and watch that because when that moves under, you know, under your jaw where your tongue connects, when you push pressure with your tongue, it moves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would watch him do that. So, like, on the chuckles, like, okay, I watch how it moves to kind of get a feel for how his tongue's moving. You know, like, okay, this is how he's putting pressure. this is where, like, this is how much it's moving. And so after I was done with the Wayne Carlton DVD, it all went to Corey Jacobson. And this was before I knew how phenomenal he the guy is, you know. I just went on YouTube and put elk calling, and he popped up. And so I would watch him over and over, not even specifically instructional DVDs, just him hunting. And I would always just rewind to where it shows him calling, because I would listen, watch his mouth. I'd zoom in, watch, you know, just watch his facial movement so I can see what I need to be doing, you know. And that, to this day, I still do that. If I don't like how something's going, I will bring up his, I think it was his 2015 world champion finals, and I will just watch. I will zoom in and I will watch. I won't even call, I'll just watch. I'll rewind it, listen, watch. And then I would go and do it on my own. And if I don't like how it's turning out, I just keep doing it. It's the process was long. It's crazy, crazy process.
So were you basing the sounds that you were trying to make, was that all covered in the Wayne Carlton video? So was he saying, like, this is a challenge bugle, and this is a cow call, and this is a distress call?
It wasn't. So basically, he was, it was very, very lightly he touched on it, though, like a locate bugle and chuck bolts, you know, he explained what those were in a sense. But there's so many different meanings. To me, I think there's different meanings to what a chuckle can be, right? So I kind of took what he said, but in a sense, I didn't. Because if you watch other people, like I watch Paul, I think Elknut, you know, he goes into depth on YouTube on what different calls are and what, you know, like challenge bugle, you know, curding bugle, chuckles, lip balls, all that stuff. And I watched him for a little bit to get a kind of feel for it, but I guess I don't really try to make those specific sounds out there. I think what I'm just doing is figuring out what's gonna make that bull be committed to come to me, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Do you have a go-to sequence that you like to use when you're calling them?
I know it's gonna sound funny, but I just do, I'll do a couple cow calls and then a locate bugle, kind of like where Jason does.
Okay.
But other than that, I just locate a lot of the times. I'll do like a 3-note locate, try to not sound so big. But it's hard because I like sounding big. It sounds really good.
Right. So. Yeah.
But yeah.
So when's the Rustin Foo educational videos coming out?
Oh, you know, that's going to be a while. I gotta establish myself in this industry of the elk calling. I'm just getting started. I'm scratching the surface, competition wise. And I'm loving where it's going. This journey has really blown up for me within the past year. Like, now I'm finally seeing where this can all take me if I keep at it. So that's what's exciting, you know, and that's where I would like to be. And once I get there, I will do all the instructional videos I can.
Yeah, right. So I want to talk about competitions and the rendezvous, because that's where I saw you for the first time, at least calling.
Yeah.
I've been following you on social media for a while, but I was like, holy cow, man, this dude is crushing it. But I wanted to ask a question about elk calling. And so the videos that you watched and that Wayne Carlton stuff, I got it. That was a while back, and there's been more. Obviously, there's tons more videos out there today. If you could point people in a direction, right? Me, I don't know how to call very good. Where would you tell me to go right now to start learning and start watching? What's today's Wayne Carlton?
Honestly, so Wayne Carlton, I would say, if you're looking to go, if you, you know, you have nowhere to start, the best reference I can give you would be Elk 101, the Corey Jacobson University of Elk Hunting. He breaks it down phenomenally, from placement to mastering the airflow, the sounds, and even in depth on bugles and shuffles. That would be my number one go-to, just because the game has changed so much since the Wayne Carlton days, you know, from his instructional.
Yeah.
And I would wholeheartedly point anybody to Elk 101. That is a phenomenal resource.
And is that, are you talking on the University of Elk Hunting, or is it the Elk 101 YouTube series that Corey did, where he does, he kind of breaks down calling into a few different YouTube videos, or both?
Yeah, I'm referring to the actual Elk 101, University Elk 101.
Okay.
You know, where you can go and look at the different module he has and all that.
Right. Got it. Okay. I just wanted to make sure. That, I think that's perfect, because he does, that University of Elk Hunting is absolutely phenomenal. It really is. And
it,
I don't,
it really is.
Yeah. I tell people, I probably, at least every other show, it comes up in somebody that I talk to.
I used it last year for a lot of more just fine tuning and making sure I was doing it right, because a lot of where I came from was self-taught. Like, I did the Wayne Carlton instructional DVD, and then from then it was just watching YouTube. I had nobody to coach me, you know. I didn't go to classes, or, you know, there was nobody I knew in the industry that could help me on that level.
Uh-huh.
So it was all just myself watching YouTube videos. And like you brought up, you know, the Elk 101 series, the YouTube series, like even like any videos that they posted, or Corey Jacobson himself, all hunting, I would just watch it, you know, and then that's where I learned. That's how I picked up everything I did. And then Elk 101 just finalized everything. Like, okay, I am doing it right. Like, what else can I fine tune? And that's where I went to the Elk 101. And not just for elk calling, everything else he offers, you know, and that's what I love about his whole University of Elk Hunting.
Yeah, me too. And it's kind of just the way he presents it. It's understandable, and it's just done well.
Yeah, it's done very well.
Okay, so competitions, we'll talk about previous to BHA Rendezvous here in a minute, but this is what led me to reach out to you. And I don't know if you and I talked about this when we first started talking, but I think I was watching Ty Stubblefield. He was he a judge at that? I think.
Yeah. Yep. Ty was one of the four judges.
Yeah, okay. So I think he was recording you guys, and the first couple dudes stepped up and made some noises and stuff, and it was way better than what I would do, of course, but it was pretty good. And then you come walking out, and it was like, holy cow, where did this dude come from? It was loud. Yeah. To me, it was just awesome. And I just started doing a little bit more research and, like, looking you up. And I think Ty had a few more videos of you on there, too, and all of them, you're just crushing it. So that was really cool to see that. And
okay.
So that's why I reached out. And then when we started talking about it, you had mentioned that you have some upcoming stuff as well. But let's go back. How long have you been doing competitions?
Honestly, that was my very first competition.
Okay.
I was always afraid, you know, like it takes, you, from the crowd, it may not seem like to go up there and do that is that big a deal, but try to control everything under the nerves is super hard. And I never, from the beginning, I never thought I had what it takes. Like, yeah, I practice a lot and I think that sounds okay, but you don't get the verification from other people. So you really don't know what you sound like, you know? So to go out there in front of all those people and just do that, I wasn't actually even going to do that. My buddy over at Angry Spike Productions, Corey Ford, he convinced me into doing it. He's like, you got nothing to lose, man. Just go for it. So I went for it, and here we are. And I don't regret it one bit. It was a phenomenal experience.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. Well, hopefully. So what do you have upcoming? I think, didn't you get an invite to go somewhere or something like that?
After the BHA, I guess technically invited. I was talking to Corey Jacobson, and he's like, man, you need to go to Worlds. I will see you there July 11th, Park City. He was like, you can do this. And hearing that from a 10-time world champion, you know, is that just opened my eyes in a whole new level, and I'm going to make sure I get there. But before I get there, the Northwest Mountain Challenge they've been starting to host elk calling competitions. Like, there was one just in Hoodoo I didn't make it to, but I will be at the one in Tamarack, and it'd be a good warm-up, you know, get the nerves flowing in front of a bunch of people again. And I think that'll really help me just be able to control the nerves, I guess you could say, and get more comfortable with it, I guess, as comfortable as I can before I go to Worlds, because anytime I even think about Worlds, I start shaking. Like, I'm shaking right now thinking about it, you know?
Man, you're going to do
it's Tamarack and then Worlds July 11th in Park City.
When is Tamarack?
Tamarack is June 21st to the 23rd.
Okay.
I believe that they haven't sent out on what day that the competition will be, but I believe it will be on Friday the 21st, I think.
Cool. Okay. And then Worlds. Right. So that is awesome. So we're going to have to catch back up after Worlds is over and see how it went.
Yeah, for sure, man. That'd be good to talk about that one.
Yeah. Well, all right. So let's transition a little bit out of elk calling, sort of.
Okay.
You said you like to see the response from the people in the crowd. I'm more curious about the response from the critters on the ground, right? So how has your calling gone? Like, when you're out in the woods, how is the response from elk, and what are you seeing as a result from all this, the time and energy that you put into teaching yourself how to call?
Well, so I called in, you know, handful of bulls, or more than that. But the real, like, for me, what I get out of it is when I'm out there, when I first started calling in bulls, I'd get a bull to answer, but I wouldn't know where to go from there. You know, I was like, all right, well, let's go in his direction and then just mimic him. That's what everybody says, is if you don't, you know, you last resort, just make the sounds he's making. And I had a lot of times where bulls would come in and then be quiet, and then I would be sitting there calling, trying to figure it out. And as the more I called in bulls, the more opportunity I got to, okay, this is what's working. Like, that bull reacted better to this, because they're all going to react differently. So it's, what are they going to react to? And I would say the last couple years has been, I might not have called in as many bulls as a lot of people, but I called them in and they came. I knew what I was, in a sense, I felt like I knew what I was doing, because I made that bull commit from wherever he was to where I am. And I think it's just more of, it's helping me understand what they're saying and what I need to say to them. Because in the woods, it doesn't matter what you sound like to an extent. It's more of what you're saying. And that's something I'm still learning. I'm starting to get a hang of it a lot more, but it's like, okay, there's a lot more things that I could learn on what to say and when to say it, referring to, you know, should I do a challenge bugle now, or should I just do a lip ball now? Or, you know, like, what's the difference, and what is that going to gain me if I do this call instead of that call? You know, that's still something I'm picking up, but I think having a better sound works in my favor, I guess, like, just because that bull's like, all right, okay, well, then he sounds real, I guess, in a sense. Not like literally, like, the bull's not going to sit there like, oh, he sounds like a real elk, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess to them, it's more of, they don't have to hesitate to come in, you know, like, huh, that was weird.
I think it's more off, like a authentic sound than, because they all, like, bugles sound different every time you hear one. It's almost like a person's voice. You know, every voice is different.
Yeah.
And every, it doesn't matter. If I'm angry, I'm going to be, my bugle, if you'll say, you know, my bugle will be different than if I'm upset or tired or whatever. So it's almost just having that authentic elk sound, I think. And that's what all that practice has done for you.
Yeah, and like, you nailed it on the head, you know, it's always different. Like, if I'm running up a hill chasing a bull, you know, I'm not going to bugle the same. It's probably going to be short and not so loud because I'm out of breath.
Yeah, exactly.
It all changes.
Yeah. Well, so what's like, your, go ahead. So, no, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, last year, just this past season, I called in a bull. It all worked out perfectly. I mean, it happened so fast. I was on his trail. I was on his rub, and I knew I wasn't far behind. I made a couple moves to get up onto the next ridge, and I bugled. I waited because I figured they were close, and next thing you know, he starts chuckling at me, you know, not even 100 yards away. So I just did a soft bugle, not like a locate, just a two-note, nothing crazy. And he fires back, but he's closer. And at that point, I knew he was super committed. So it was actually my fiance was shooter. And it all worked out perfectly. Like, I guess it also depends on where you're at. You know, your positioning to an elk and what you're going to be throwing at them is going to change everything completely, you know.
So but, what was the result of that sequence right there? Did your fiance put the bull down?
Well, she did get an arrow in him. He came to 19 yards. She was dead in front of him. I was off to the side. She did get a good shot, but for some reason, we just could not turn him up. We searched for like 2-3 days.
Oh, man.
Endlessly. Yeah, it was a rough experience, but she is thankful that she got to experience it, which, you know, we talk about it. Of course, it sucks that you lose an animal, but now she knows what to do differently. She knows what to expect, you know, and for me, I learned a lot. And that calling situation, like, that was my fastest calling. I mean, it happened in a blink of an eye. I bugled, he chuckled, bam, he's right there,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so you don't always have to call a lot. How hot is the bull? Is the bull willing to die that day? That's what my buddy Shannon from.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite sayings people always say is, there's a bull out here, and that bull is willing to die today. We just got to find that one bull, that one that's willing to die today. I like to hear that. So,
yeah.
Well, I think that's pretty awesome, dude.
Yeah, and then the funny thing about that is where we were hunting, I mean, we got absolutely rained on. We had 3.5 inches. In the month of September where we were.
Wow.
3.5 inches. And the one day it cleared up, I got out, went to the spot, and it happened. But it's weather is a big thing, I think, in my opinion, to calling. Because when it's raining that hard, nothing travels, you know? Your sound don't travel. And I took advantage of that one clear day, which was super, super good idea.
Yeah.
Paid off, I guess, makes sense.
Well, good.
So,
good, good.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite hunt that you've ever been on?
My favorite hunt. So I've been on, between here and Hawaii, I've been on quite a few different hunts. But my favorite hunt of all time, I think it's my favorite because I felt, like I was explaining to you earlier, you know, I felt like a guide in a sense. So my uncle lives in Hawaii. He's my dad's brother. He used to live in Oregon, and he's rifle hunted elk and stuff, but he's never hunted rutting elk, you know, never experienced that bull, you know, the bull's bugling and stuff like that. And so we were talking, and I was like, hey, why don't you come up here and come up in September for a couple weeks, and I'll take you out, and, you know, we'll go hunt some Roosevelts. He was like, yeah. So he got all excited, and so the day came where opening day was here. He got in. We went and set up camps and stuff. And man, the nerves I had, granted, he was just my uncle, but the pressure and the nerves I had, like, man, this is the real deal. Like, I need to get him on an elk, or I'm going to waste his money and his time. You know, like, he came here to see some action, and I'm like, man, I better put some action in his hands, you know? So,
he's going to kick me out of the family.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, 5-6 days went by and nothing. And man, I am working my tail off. So finally, we get into this spot. It's primo. I mean, a spot that has everything you need. So we're going down. We're hiking down this. It's just this gnarly trail that kind of goes. Like there's this big knob, and the trail kind of is like halfway down this knob, and it circles all the way around. But we're dropping down, and there's a steep ravine off to the right, and I just let out a bugle, and this bull pipes off immediately. From that point, like, my nerves and, okay, I need to make the right noise. Like, all right, what's he going to do now? He responds quick. What's he going to do? Where's he going? And he had cows. I was like, okay, this is awesome. Herd bull. So all in all, everything happens. We drop down, chase after this bull, and he runs up out the other side. So we're chasing him. I'm running up this hill, about to pass out, trying to get on this bull. And finally, I get him to stop and come back. Well, being the thick cover and just how gnarly the drainages were, I really thought that bull was farther than he was. And, you know, I told my uncle, get up there, get to the point right there and set up, and I will drop down here and I will try to bring that bull a little closer because he wasn't very far. My uncle runs up there, gets set up, and that bull's cresting the hill, and they meet face to face. I mean, he could have stuck his bull out and poked it with his arrow. And he jumps in his tracks, my uncle does, and turns around and looks at me, and I can see the white around his eyes all over. He was so excited. And from that point on, that made the whole trip for me. You know, we got on a couple other bulls. We just never were able to make it happen. But that first initial, I mean, if that bull wasn't any dumber, they would have collided into each other if they kept both going, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that bull spun and took off. We didn't get another chance. But just that initial, watching his face and how excited he was when he saw that bull coming in right there, that sealed it. Like, man, if I could be knowledgeable enough and good enough and have the luxury to hunt where there's a lot of elk, like, something I want to do is take people that's never experienced it and let them experience it. You know, like, that's a goal I want to do. Like, I have a lot of friends that have never experienced it. And if I had enough time in September to take everybody out and try to get them on a bugle and bull just to experience it, I would. And that's a goal I have set just because of my passion for elk calling. You know, it's like, man, I want everybody to experience this, you know? And that's something I'm really shooting for to try to do.
Yeah, that's super cool. So it's more about the calling for you than the hunt. Or I guess, let's say, not the hunt, because that's absolutely part of the hunt. But it's more important, the call and the challenge of the calling, than it is to kill the animal, to shoot it or whatever, with your bow or your rifle or whatever you've got. Okay. Yeah, I think that's really, really cool.
You know, I do love to hunt elk myself, you know, but just over the years learning the call so much, you know, and still have a heck of a lot more to learn. It's just, to me, that's what gets me, is seeing that person's face or that reaction when that bull steps out, or they see the bull, or say the call sequence didn't work out or a setup was wrong, but that bull still came in. Just that bull, and knowing that I did my part talking with this majestic animal as they are, you know, like, man, I was saying things to make this bull come to me. Like, that will get me every time. Like, I'm literally talking with this guy.
Yeah.
That to me is what it's all about.
I think that's awesome, man. It's such a passion. You got such a passion for it, and that's what it takes. Do you rifle hunt too?
No, all I do is archery. I archery hunt everything. Nothing wrong with rifle hunting. I just prefer that getting close, you know, what gets my adrenaline going the most, I guess I would say. I'm not saying you can't get an adrenaline rush from rifles, because I know you can, but I just grew up archery hunting, and that's what I stuck with, and that's what I fell in love with.
Yeah.
That's what I prefer.
What's your bow setup? What do you shoot?
My bow setup. So right now, I'm actually a field staff shooter for Darden Archery. Darden is out of the Mid-East area, like Michigan. They're based out of Michigan.
Uh-huh.
So I shoot a Darden. It's a 70-pound bow. My arrows are 525 grains. I like to have a little heavier arrow, especially with the short. I have a short draw length because I'm a short person.
Uh-huh.
I have a 27-inch draw, so I try to pack as much power behind that arrow just so I know when it makes contact, it's going to be good.
Gotcha. And are you a front of center guy? Are you shooting heavy broadheads and inserts and all that stuff? Or okay.
Yeah, well, so I try to focus on front of center, but just because my arrows are cut so short, I run a 150 grain broadhead with 45 grains of weight behind the insert. So in a sense, it's a lot of FOC, but when it comes down to percentages, I'm only at like 21%. Okay. So, or I'm not, sorry. I'm at like 19%. So it's not really that critical. It's about average.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Man, that's funny. I have, to be honest, I haven't heard of Dart and Bows in a while. Not since I was younger.
It's okay. You're not the first person. Every time I'm at an archery, like a 3D shoot or something, and you're like, what are you shooting, a dart? You know, I'd be like, yeah, I'm shooting a dart. And they're like, what is that? I've never heard of them. I'm like, oh, don't worry about it.
Yeah, 20 years ago, they would have heard of them. When I was a younger kid, which many, many years ago, darting was a pretty big thing. And then they kind of fell off for a while. And then I thought they came back in the crossbow world. And I'm looking at their website right now, and they are into crossbows and still making compounds. So cool. I have to check them out.
Yeah, honestly, I love the way my bow shoots. I've never shot a dart before until I got the field step thing, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's just a percentage drop. It's a certain percentage off the bow year. It's nothing, you know, crazy. But I was shooting the Matthews Halon 5 before I shot my dart, and I was getting some pretty good speed, you know. The bow was comfortable, but when I put my hands on this dart and started shooting, man, I fell in love. This thing is an absolute tank of a bow.
What model is it? What do you shoot?
So I shoot the Maverick 2. It was their 2017, or 2018, I think. 2017 or 18, it was their the new bow at the time, and man, it is
okay.
The FPS I get out of that thing for my short draw length is a lot better than my Halon 5, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, now they have a Maverick XT. Cool. That's really neat. I think that's awesome. I'm glad people are shooting other companies. There's a lot of those little smaller bow companies out there that people never really hear of, and then when you see one, you're like, what the heck is that thing? And it turns out, man, there's good technology in it. They're doing a lot of things. They just don't have the same marketing campaign or marketing that some of the bigger bow companies have.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think so. The biggest reason they accepted me, because my buddy is also a shooter for them. He's like, hey, they're accepting applications, you know. And I think the reason for them wanting to give more applications is because they don't have much advertisement here in the Pacific Northwest. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's all Michigan. It's way back east over there. So I think that's what kind of made them like, yeah, you know, whatever we can get over in the Northwest, you know, the better. So, and honestly, I love it. I love my bow to death. It's awesome.
Yeah. And you're a sick guy, right?
I am a sick guy.
Just got some sweet upgrades.
I love my shooter. I did get a sweet upgrade. It's I'm loving it. Haven't got to use it yet, but I use the vest quite often. But
aside from some of the upgrades, I know that some of the upgrades that you got were prizes that you won at the rendezvous. But what are some of your most important pieces of gear that you carry that you, like your top three items, let's say, that you carry, and why do you carry those as far as gear goes?
Yeah, no, for sure. So I kind of went, you know, I thought about a lot of different things, you know, like what is important to me the most, like what could I not be out there without, you know. And so rain jacket is definitely one of them, especially being out on the coast. You never know when you're going to need it. That is, for me, something that's very important. Another thing that I will not go anywhere without, I will go on every hunt with, is a rangefinder. I have missed multiple animals due to not knowing the yardage. And if you are an archery hunter, you will always be able to rely on a rangefinder. And that is, I think, almost the most important thing for any archery hunter, is having a rangefinder. Unless you're a phenomenal yard judger, you know, like, you can't leave. Don't forget your rangefinders if you're archery hunting. That's all I'm going to say. You can count on that 110%. And then another thing, like, I really like to carry extra socks. It's weird. I'll carry one pair of extra socks with me. So I got to do a stock and in my socks, and they get dirty. You don't want to wear dirty socks in your boots, because then it makes your feet all weird. And, you know, your feet get wet, or if you just sweat a lot, it's nice to have a fresh pair of socks. It's weird, but I don't know. I like that.
Yeah.
But those are, like, three things that are really fundamental to me.
Got it. That's I like to hear. Everybody has three different things that they're attached to, you know. And I think those are three good ones. I'm terrible at judging range. Straight on level ground, I can do pretty good out to about 40 or 50 yards. But if you throw an incline or a decline in there, it gets thrown way off. So I'm totally with you on that range finder, man. I can. Yep, absolutely.
No, I'm right there with you, man. It's a struggle.
Yeah. Okay, so before we shut this thing down, what do you got as far as tips that you can give to rookie hunters rookies or let's say first, second, third year hunters, people that, you know, want to come out west, but what do you got to kind of teach them? What do they need to know before they come out west?
No, for sure. It's pretty, like, it'll tie back into the rain jacket for the first one. Like, just the weather, man. The weather out in the west can be unpredictable at times. In my opinion, you know, you never know what you're going to expect. So, just, I guess I would say come prepared, you know, for cold weather, hot weather, all in the same week. You just never know. And it would suck to be out there and not be prepared. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Especially the weather out west is ridiculous sometimes. So that's one thing that I would think, you know, a lot of people should keep in mind if they're coming out west or whatever the scenario, even for people who live out in the west, you know, like you can guarantee everybody's going to be prepared for any weather.
Right.
The next two are just going to revolve like around elk hunting. And something I've learned over the years is a lot of people, when they come out and they come out west and they hunt elk, don't be afraid to be aggressive. The worst thing you can do is not be aggressive enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're not aggressive and take that chance, you're not gonna know what had happened if you didn't. And that question, say you travel all the way from the east to the west and you got a bull going and you don't push him, you don't be aggressive, you're gonna leave wondering, man, what would have happened? You know, like, should I have just pushed, you know, another 100 yards and maybe, because that could be the fine line between that bull coming in or that bull running away. So don't fear. I had spent a lot of time being unaggressive and it cost me a lot. And so I think that's very important. You will learn at what time to be aggressive, but I think it's safer to say to be more aggressive than not.
Gotcha.
I mean, that's, at least to me, that's something key for elk hunting is doing it new. Is don't be afraid to be aggressive, at least in my opinion. You know, everybody's different, but along with being aggressive, there's times where patience is possible. You know, if you know elk are in the area and you call and you're not just hang out and listen, hang out for 10, 15 minutes, you know?
Yep. And then be aggressive. Be patient and then be aggressive. Or be aggressive and then be patient, one or the other. But so I want to circle back a little bit to being prepared, and this is just probably going to be really quick, but what's a go-to layering system for you out there in the Pacific Northwest? What's your clothing setup look like?
Okay, so for upper, I'll just have a lightweight t-shirt or long sleeve, either one depending. And then I will have a quarter zip over that and then some sort of a pullover. So that way I can layer down quicker. Like, say it's getting warm, I'll take off that pullover top and just have the quarter zip, lightweight. And then that'll be my uppers. My lowers, I'll just, for early season, it gets a little cold in the morning, but I just run, I don't know the name of them, but there's like skin tight under my pants and then just my pants. I don't wear long leggings just because I know throughout the day things heat up. So most of the time that's my go-to, the three tops and just one bottom. You know, I don't layer my bottoms because I'm always running hot.
Yeah,
okay. My legs and my feet always run hot.
I'm the same way. What about, so for those, are they synthetic, your upper stuff? Do you run synthetic or merino, or how do you set that up?
My base, I always do the Sitka Core short sleeve or the long sleeve shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mid layer will be the Sitka, the Core lightweight quarter zip hoodie.
Gotcha.
And then after that, I'll do the Core medium weight zip up pullover.
Okay. Yep.
for my outer.
Gotcha. I'm pretty similar in setup. I like to wear a merino base t-shirt, and then I wear the core hoodie, the lightweight core hoodie, okay. And then I have the Apex hoodie, and I put that on. If it's cold outside, I'll throw that Apex hoodie on, and that thing's killer. I love that Apex hoodie. So
I just got the Apex from the competition. I'm excited to give it a go.
Oh, man.
I've been wanting that, but I never made it around to it.
You'll love that thing, man. Cause it can, so I've worn it as a base layer on chilly days. When I was down in last year in December and I was running around Arizona, I used it as a base layer with, just as a base layer. And I just wore that thing. And then when I got up to the top of the mountains, I just throw my puffy on top of it so I didn't get cold. And it was perfect.
Yeah.
Awesome. It was great, man. Great piece. But anyway.
You're making me more excited now. That's awesome.
Well, good, man. We're getting there, right? It's June. So September's. September's right around the corner. All right, dude. Amen. I think we'll wrap it up there. And so you want to leave your contact info and social media and stuff if people want to go check you out?
Yeah, definitely. Just at the Hawaiian Hunter, you can put my Instagram up on there. I have a Facebook, but I don't quite do it as much as I do my Instagram, so.
Okay, man. So the Hawaiian Hunter, the_Hawaiian_Hunter, right?
Yep, okay. Correct.
On Instagram. Check him out. Rustin's got a cool page on there, and I think we'll wrap it up there, dude. I appreciate you coming on. You got anything else before we shut it down? You got anything else you want to say or put out?
Oh man, I just want to thank you for the opportunity, man. Well, you guys do awesome. Very, very knowledge based, man. The stuff you can learn from you guys is awesome. And I'm honored to be part of your show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That means a lot. And you're welcome. Thank you for coming on. I think that's you put out a lot of good stuff there with the just pay attention to what other people are doing. I am guilty, man. I throw a reed call or a diaphragm call in my mouth and I'll blow on it. I'll do all kinds of stuff. Like I said, it sounds like I'm calling in donkeys or something, but I'm not paying attention to what other people. I understand. I know what the sounds sound like, but I don't really pay attention to their mouth to know what they're doing when they're getting those sounds. So now I've got something new to try.
In a sense, I might have overkilled with that, but that's just what's helped me really fine-tune.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think it's okay. Like, if somebody's bugling next to me, I'm not staring at their face. But
sure you're not. No, you're just staring into their eyes. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Right on, dude.
Well, I wanted to say thanks to Rustin for coming on the show, and I wanted to throw in a quick update here. So since we recorded this show, you probably heard us talking about Tamarack and the World Championship. Well, since we recorded this show, Rustin went out to Tamarack, Idaho to the Northwest Mountain Challenge and competed in that elk calling competition out there. And Rustin took home first place out at Tamarack. So congratulations to him. I think it's totally awesome. He's out there just crushing it, and I just think it's great. So everything that he's doing and all the stuff we talked about during the course of this show is working for him, and I think it could work for us too, and I'm certainly going to take advantage of some of the stuff that he told us about today, start trying to teach myself how to be at that level as well. Probably not winning competition level, but at least be a better caller. So thanks again to Rustin for all the information. And thank you to Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network for having us on the network. Really appreciate everything Dan does over there for us. Don't forget, we talked a lot about the University of Elk Hunting by Elk 101. And we talked about how great it is and how much it can help you and your elk calling and your abilities and just kind of teaching you and getting you prepped for the woods. So don't forget, there is the rookies code out there so you can save $20. And with that, I think that's all I got. Next week, not sure who we got coming up. I've got my buddy Bear Taylor coming on at some point in time. I've also got Remington Baker from Elk Addicts coming on. We're going to be talking about some layering systems, different setups, and just kind of how to layer yourself in the early season, mid-season, late season type of gear and what he wears and what he's been doing for years. So we got that coming up. I'm not sure if that'll be next week or the week after, but anyway, stay tuned. Keep coming back. I really appreciate everybody that listens. Thanks, man. Out of here.